So I wanted to tell you a story about part of the reason why I am here telling this story. But I'm going to need your help. I need a sound effect a little later on in the story, and I'm going to have you do the sound effect. But you don't have to worry about it because it's the world's easiest sound effect. Matter of fact, you're going to do it right now on the count of three. One, two, three. Perfect. That's exactly what I needed right there. So there have been times in my life when I've been inspired, so inspired by a certain person or an idea or a skill. I've been so inspired that I've created an image for myself and try to copy that image as much as possible based on whatever it was that inspired me. And sometimes I get so obsessive about duplicating that image of myself that I actually lose myself. But there's other times when the image and myself kind of balance out together. Sometimes. When I was about 8 or 9 years old, I went on a road trip with my dad and my uncle Frank. We were going to Boise, Idaho, because my uncle had bought a bar in Boise, and so we were going there to work on the bar to get it ready for opening and to do some fishing. Now, my dad and my uncle Frank, especially when they get together, they are like men's men, right? The beer drinking, dirty joke telling, girl ogling dudes, guys, right? And so for me, this was kind of a cool thing. This was a coming of age thing. I'm one of the guys now. And so my uncle, he and a friend had made a camper shell from my uncle's old Ford pickup. And while my dad and my uncle traded driving duties in the cab, I laid out in the back of the camper shell and watched the American landscape go through the rear of the trucks in rewind motion, pretty much. And when we got to Boise, we stayed with my uncle's ex-wife, Betty. She was nice. And unfortunately, the minute we arrived, I got sick, really sick, the stomach flu. And so I was promptly put to bed, where I ran a high fever, and then every once in a while I ran to the bathroom to throw up, and then ran back to bed to keep on running the high fever back and forth. And this went on for several days. So while my dad and my uncle were working on the bar and fishing, I was in bed. But it wasn't so bad, because Betty had a record player, and she had a couple classic Bill Cosby comedy albums. And I listened to those albums over and over again and just laughed and laughed and felt better, then ran to the bathroom and throw up and then come back and then listen to them some more and laugh and laugh. And they were the classic routines, the Fat Albert, of course, the Junior Barnes, Driving in San Francisco, Noah's Ark, the classic Bill Cosby routines. Fast forward several years, and I'm a senior at UC Santa Barbara, finishing up my degree in marine biology. But I've always been a performer since I was a kid, one way or the other, so I always had that in my back pocket. And during my senior year, the Associated Students, they had monthly comedy nights where they invited professional comedians to the University Center to entertain the students. And this was the heyday of the new kind of comedy. You know, the days of Rodney Dangerfield and Henny Youngman, those were over. Now it was the new comedians of like Robin Williams and Jerry Seinfeld and Gary Shandling. Observational comedy, raw, brash, just a new kind. So it got really popular. It got so popular that they decided to have a student comedy night where they invited any student who wanted to come up on stage and have a few minutes doing a stand-up routine. Now, me, I'm inspired by Bill Cosby, first of all. I've got performing in my back pocket, so I sign up. And immediately I form an image of myself. A Bill Cosby-style storytelling. This is a genius comedic storytelling, right? And I developed some material, and I think it's pretty good. So we're a couple days before the show, and they have a meeting with all the students that signed up. And one of them was a buddy of mine. He was in the same major as I was. And there was maybe half a dozen other ones that signed up. And then about halfway through the meeting, in walks a guy who, it was like Spicoli walking into the classroom in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was just like a stoner, right? And we're just thinking, man, this guy, why is he even here? Is he here on a dare? Is he in the right place or what, you know? And I knew for myself, he hadn't formed an image of myself that he was trying to copy. He wasn't taking it seriously like that, you know? So show time comes, and it is packed. Double the crowd of any of the other performances where there were professional comedians. And I'm a little nervous, but I feel pretty good about my material. So a couple people go, and they do pretty good. And then my buddy, who's in my major, he gets up, and he does straight jokes and punchlines. Bang, 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 bang. And he gets a few chuckles, and he comes, sits down, and everyone thinks, you know, he's kind of a goofy guy. That's kind of cute. Went up there and told jokes. And then it was my turn, and I got up there, and I started going into my Bill Cosby genius comedy storytelling type of routine. And let me tell you how well it went over. This is where the sound effect comes in. On the count of three, I want the sound effect again. One, two, three. That's what it sounded like. I died a horrible, miserable, melting in hell death. Terrible. And so I got through my routine. I'm not even a smile, not a smirk. Mostly people, confused faces. That's all I saw. And I sat down as fast as I could, put my head down, and I was humiliated beyond belief. And then right after me, stoner guy gets up on stage. And he launches into his routine, and it is raunchy. He's talking about sex and drugs and partying. He talked about masturbation before it became popular to talk about masturbation like it is now. And he's killing. People are just roaring. And it was then that I realized, oh yeah, this is a college audience. Fast forward several more years later, and I take my daughter to a children's festival, and we see a storyteller by the name of Diane Ferlat. And she's good, and she's funny, and she's engaging, and a spark starts rolling in my head again. And then we move down here, and my wife is at Coalesce Bookstore in Morro Bay, and they need somebody to tell stories to the preschoolers once a week, their story time. And she volunteers me, and I do it. We call that boot camp for storytellers, telling the preschoolers. And they like it. I have found my audience. And then I start getting more work, and I tell the even older people than preschoolers, so families and kids. And so I stand here now as somebody who's told stories to people for probably 15, 16 years now to thousands of people. And I discovered that image that I made of myself kind of morphed over to myself. I didn't really lose myself into that image. That image kind of came over to me as soon as I found the right audience for myself. Postscript to this story. On our last day in Boise, we're driving out, and I'd been sick the entire time, and my dad and my uncle, they felt terrible that I didn't even get the chance to go fishing once. And so they decided to pull on the side of the road next to a stream, and we all cast out, and we're just waiting and waiting and waiting. Nobody, not a bite, not a bite. And then finally my uncle, he's just dejected, and my dad dejected. They come over to me, shoulders down, they say, all right, Kirk, we got to get going. Come on, load up. And right then, I swear to God, right then I feel a tug on my pole. But my spool is too loose. The line just keeps on just whizzing out. And my uncle comes over real fast and tightens the spool and then starts coaching me on how to bring the fish in. And I finally bring it in, and it's a big, beautiful trout. And my dad and my uncle, they smile at each other, and they smile at me, and they said, that's the biggest fish any of us have caught this whole trip. That's my story.